Hi, everyone. I'm Andy.
And I'm Allie.
And welcome back for another week of Marianne and Wanda, your favorite book club and media podcast.
Yes, and this time we're recording in the morning, which is wild for us.
I know. We were supposed to start at 7:30, and it's now 8:20, so just a little behind schedule, but it's fine.
We've had some technical issues.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, lots of new stuff been happening with you. You just had a conference.
I did. I just had the Ocean Sciences meeting, which is a huge meeting for all marine scientists, essentially. And it went pretty well. I had a little flash talk, which was a minute long, and I stayed within my time limit. And honestly, I don't want to say anything bad about my co-presenters, but they did not do as good a job as I did. There were a lot of people. Well, there were a lot of people who were like essentially just trying to show their data and be like, these are the things we found. But if you don't contextualize it and give an idea of the background, a lot of people aren't going to understand even like why what you're showing is important and new.
Right. Yeah.
And so not to brag, but I did a really good job. So I have an interview this week, so I'm excited for that as well.
Fingers crossed for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm told that the interviewer is very easy to talk to and quite nice. So
that's good. That makes it better.
Yes, it does. Yeah. But if it goes poorly, that means that like I'm the problem. But only one way to find out. So yeah.
You'll do fine. I went to Deb's 60th birthday party yesterday.
Oh yeah. How was that?
It was good. They had it at Goodlettsville Church of Christ, which I have not been over to Goodlettsville in a long time. Mm-hmm. It was like down the street from the old orthodontist office.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The Goodlettsville one.
Yeah. That's where they go to church, right?
I don't know. They did say they got married there, but I don't know if they still currently go there. They probably do. I don't know.
Probably, yeah.
So Rosie's been sick also, so she is not in a good mood.
Poor baby.
So she spent Friday home with me, and I still had to work like normal. And she just was like laying on the couch, watching cartoons, whatever, and not bothering anybody or me. And then at 9 o'clock, right when my meeting started, that I have to like actively lead, like share my notes on screen, guide the conversation, she decided she had to pitch a fit and scream for a snack. And I was like, give me 30 minutes. I just got to get through this meeting. But she was like, I want a snack. And so everybody on the call was like, I'm sure they could hear her. I kept having to put myself on mute.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Poor baby.
She seems like she's feeling better this morning. She ate a banana, so.
Well, it's the little things, I guess.
We'll see. Yeah. But yeah, that's about all the new stuff for me that's been happening in the last week.
All right. Yep. Well, should we get into it then?
Let's do it. This was a long book.
Was it?
I felt like it was a long book.
Well, now I want to know what the page count is. So hang on. Let me Google this. It's only 288 pages. That seems like on the shorter end of what we...
Yeah, does seem like on the shorter end. I did listen to the audiobook, and maybe just the guy who was reading it was reading really slowly. But yeah it was like 10 hours, maybe more.
Yeah, I think mine was only 8 and change. So we, of course, if you don't know, we read Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. And I actually also listened to an audiobook, but I listened to, I think it was called the LibriVox recording of it.
Okay.
Because Frankenstein is so old, it's in the public domain.
Mm.
So the recording that I listened to was on Spotify for free, but it was essentially like every single chapter started with, this is a LibriVox recording in the public domain.
Hmm.
Just because, it's so old, which is incidentally also kind of why I chose it, because I figured it would be pretty easy to get access to it because it's the original version was published in 1818, which is now 206 years ago. So,
yeah, I listened to it on Spotify also for free. There was a guy who was reading it, but every chapter started with the same annoying ad.
That sucks.
But it was fine. It was nice that it was available for free.
Yes. We love the public domain, as it turns out.
All right, so let's do a little background on the author, who is Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley.
Yeah, so the original version, which is the one that we read, was published in 1818. It was anonymous because, as I'm sure that we can all understand, women weren't really allowed to do a lot of stuff in the 1800s.
Women weren't allowed to be writers.
Yeah, particularly not. So it was published anonymously. It had a foreword by her husband. Well, I don't actually know at the time. At the time, he might not have been her husband, but he became her husband later, Percy Shelley. And it was dedicated to her father, who was also, as it turns out, a big author at the time. And when it was published, many people had assumed that her husband, Percy, was the original author. And so I'm wondering now if maybe that sort of fueled into all of the misunderstanding, but all of the confusion about the original author. Because I am still near certain that when we first learned about this in high school, and this is nothing against our education at JP2, but I am near certain that we were told that this book was by Mary Shelley and Percy Shelley. And when I was looking into, like, essentially the contributions between the two, he maybe contributed like 5% of the overall novel. Mm-hmm. And essentially he was just an editor and a reviewer on it. And so I think that while I'm sure he contributed a lot, at the same time, it's like, this was her idea. This was her writing. And he is definitely not the author any more than any other editor would be an author on a book. So, mm-hmm. Yes. There was a second edition that was published under her name in 1821. So I'm not sure. The original publication only had, I think, 500 prints of the copy, or I guess 500 copies of the book. So I'm not sure if maybe it sold enough that they were able to put out a second edition and can attribute it to her. But
yeah. Well, that's good that she finally got her name in it. So Mary Shelley actually wrote the original when she was 18. That's when she started to write it. And then she was 20 when it was published. And she was roughly 15 or 16 years old when she met Percy, who was 5 years older than her at the time.
So Percy was a married man whenever she met him and started her relationship with him. Lots of gossip in this.
Yeah, I don't know that at least today, 15 or 16 year old girl would not be hanging out with a 20 or 21 year old man.
Well, I would hope not, yeah.
Then again, this was 200 years ago.
Yeah, their life expectancy was a lot shorter, so they had to get things going a lot quicker. Yeah, and do you know the name Mary Wollstonecraft?
So that name does sound familiar. And when I looked it up and saw that that was her middle name, I was like, man, where do I know that name from? But I can't figure out what I know it from.
So we definitely learned about her in high school. She was a big feminist. She had feminist writings, including A Vindication of the Rights of Women.
Oh.
And her big thing, which is not shocking today, is just essentially that men and women should have equal rights and that they are both people and that they are capable of similar things. Yeah. So it's she was a big feminist. She was maybe, you know, like the start of the biggest wave of feminism as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
But she did die about 11 days after Mary Shelley's birth. So,
yeah, I read that she got an infection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she died. Man, I'm so glad for modern medicine.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. is still not great when it comes to maternal health, but nonetheless,
it's got to be better than it was 200 years ago.
For sure. I was still reading through this, and her stepsister Claire, so I'm guessing that was from her father, William Godwin, fled from home with Mary and Percy whenever they left because her father didn't approve of their relationship for good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But she fled with them, and Percy and Claire had an alleged affair like while they were traveling around, which was wild to me.
Hmm.
When Percy and Mary got together, his wife was pregnant, which is just, you know, it's bad enough that he was married, but the added layer of her also being pregnant does not look good for Percy.
Yeah, this family's got some issues. Yeah, so while they were traveling around, which it seemed like the Shelleys did travel around a whole lot, and that was mm-hmm. part of the reason why Mary Shelley set the scene for the story Frankenstein in Geneva, Switzerland, and some spots in Germany. Like, that was a lot of the areas where they were traveling around to. So at some point when they were traveling, they stayed next to two neighbors that they became pretty close with. One of them was Lord Byron, which we've, I think, all heard of the name before. He was also mm-hmm. an author at the time. Actually, I think he was a poet, more of a poet.
Yes, big poet.
Okay. And so they, I think it was, yeah, Mary, Percy, the sister Claire, and Lord Byron, and maybe somebody else with Lord Byron. They all, one night, were like, let's have a contest to see who can write the best ghost story. And so that was where Melly. That was where Mary Shelley came up with the idea of Frankenstein.
Yeah, it was them and Lord Byron's doctor, John Pilidori, I think is how you say his name.
It was.
Yeah. And so they decided to have this contest because they were reading Phantasmagoriana, which is a collection of German scary stories that had been translated into French at the time.
Yep. And then Mary won the contest. I don't know how that's graded, but.
Oh, well. I think that she might have been the only one who actually wrote a book.
Oh, so she won by default.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, if none of these men are going to do anything, then yes, she's the one who wins just by having a book.
Yeah.
And I want to say that I read maybe either in the New Yorker article or the Wikipedia page, her husband sort of pushed her to expand on it and talk a lot more. And so that's when it became more of a novel. Hmm. So
I will save my thoughts for later, but I kind of agree it should have stayed with a short story.
Oh, hot take.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the only other thing is that we know a lot about Frankenstein's monster specifically because, like, this book has been adapted many times into plays and movies. And, like, the classic, like, you know, like the flat head, what are those, like, bolts out of the side of the neck, that sort of image? Came from a 1931 movie starring Boris Karloff as the creature. So, And I mean, it's everywhere. Like, I remember watching Scooby-Doo. What is it? Scooby-Doo's the one where they're at the house, at the school. I think it's Ghoul School. Okay. It doesn't matter. There's a Scooby-Doo where there's a Ghoul School and there's Frankenstein's monster and then also Frankenstein monster's kid. And just like, yeah, constantly been in popular culture all over the place. So
yeah. Also, I just now thought about this. Did we go see this play at TPAC at Sumner?
Hmm.
I feel like we might have. And maybe it was a short story rendition. Do you remember when we went to, I'm pretty sure it was at the same time. We went to TPAC and we watched this play that was like a bunch of short stories and they did like Cask of Amontillado.
Yeah, the Telltale Heart.
Yeah, that one. I think they did Frankenstein then too. But okay. I remember it being like just almost like a scene of Frankenstein creating the monster. Like, it wasn't the whole story. It was just like the creation in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
I know I saw that. I think it was at the same time that we saw the rest of the Edgar Allan Poe stuff too.
Yeah, that would make sense. I just mostly only remember the Telltale Heart because of the like heartbeat sound they had played.
That too. Yeah. Maybe, I think this was at the same time.
Okay. I mean, that would make sense. It would fit in.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So do you want to give a quick summary since your summaries are always so good?
It is the classic story of a scientist creates a life from bits and pieces of dead bodies. But then Dr. Frankenstein, disgusted by what he's done, abandons his creation. The creature, alone, tried to find solace in family, only to be rejected, and goes on a rampage. Can Dr. Frankenstein satisfy his creature? Will he lose all of his family in the process? I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed the writing style. I know that it was a lot of stream of consciousness from Dr. Frankenstein's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But I really liked it, and I really liked the bit that was from the creations. I prefer the creature myself. from the creature's perspective as well, because it is broken up into several parts. So there are the letters of boat captain who comes across both of them. So we start off with that, and then we get like a whole bunch of background from Dr. Frankenstein. And then we have a whole section that's from the creation's point of view. That's like, essentially, I think it's, well, to me, it was a lot of a way to get you to sympathize a lot more with the creation. Mm-hmm. And then we switch back to Dr. Frankenstein's point of view.
Yeah, I think the way that the audiobook was that I listened to, it read the four letters first. Mm-hmm. And launched into the story. And the whole time during those four letters, I was like, what is going on? Who are these people? What are these letters for? And I totally forgot about the letters until the very last chapter when mm-hmm. it was brought like full circle where the boat captain was writing the letters again. And mm-hmm. Oh, that's what those were for. Like, to me, those felt a little out of place having them at the very beginning.
Yeah, I agree. It felt a little off from the rest of the book, but I, like, reflecting on it now, I kind of liked it. I don't know why it didn't occur to me that, like, the monstrous creature that they first came across was the creature, and then, like, the second person, the actual human being that they came across, was Dr. Frankenstein. But it's just like, oh, they came across this weird guy on a sled in the middle of the Arctic.
Yeah.
I also, my first question actually is, do you remember when they first came across Dr. Frankenstein and he asked the question, are any of you married?
This was in the letters in the beginning?
Yeah, in the letters in the beginning.
I don't remember that part.
Okay. Well, that was a question that I guess Frankenstein first posed whenever he came across the boat, that he was like, are you married, before he got onto the boat? And I wasn't sure if he had asked that question. It's such a small detail, but I don't know why I'm so hung up on it. But I didn't know if he had like asked that just as a way, I guess, to protect them, to make sure that by interacting with him, none of them were going to lose any of their loved ones. But yeah,
it would make sense.
Yeah.
That would be what I would think.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
So before we get too into the story, I wanted to talk about the writing style also. So because it was published in 1818, the language is a lot more like Old English, at least what I think of as Old English. I'm not a huge fan of, only because I think they add in a lot of unnecessary words. But maybe that's just because I am from this time period. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't mind it overall, but sometimes I was like, oh my gosh, they're saying 45 words when they could have actually just said 8.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. So it was a little long-winded, in my opinion. And then I think my conception of what Frankenstein was, I think before reading it, all I thought was that it's a misconception that the monster's name is Frankenstein, but it's actually the doctor. And mm-hmm. I thought the whole story was like based in the laboratory and him creating the monster, which is like one chapter of the whole book. And so there was this whole other storyline going on. I thought it was just about him creating a monster in the lab.
No, it's like all about him dealing with his creation. Yeah. And Shelley even leaves it a little ambiguous. She says, I think at one point, that Frankenstein had gotten the raw materials were supplied by the dissecting room and the slaughterhouse. So you definitely get essentially an idea that he had sewn together bits of dead bodies, but we also don't really get a clear understanding of the science, well, the alleged science behind this.
Yeah, I thought that was a little weird too, because, and I think it's just because I remember that TPAC short story, mm-hmm. but like, I remember there being a lot of like chemicals, and he talks about his tools that he uses, like mm-hmm. I'm assuming like, I don't know, a scalpel and like other medical tools like that. Mm-hmm. But it does, yeah, I was like, wait a minute. So he just like poof comes alive. It didn't give any explanation of like, yeah, the more quote science behind how he was created.
Yeah, and I definitely had assumed that there would be a scene where there like the big lightning strike and the electricity. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we're both thinking of that TPAC play.
Well, yeah, and all of the other bits and pieces of this that are in yeah, pop culture.
But that's like the most that I knew about the story. I had no idea that there was like all these murders and like trying to find the monster, and I don't know, all this other stuff. I didn't know any of that was part of it. So I was this story is not at all what I thought it was.
No. I will say it was really funny. As a scientist, it was really funny whenever Frankenstein was like talking about how he was like delving into each of these scientists, and he would spend like 2 or 3 weeks. He was like, oh, I wanted to make life, so I thought about chemistry for a little bit, and then he was like, oh, and then I realized I needed to get into anatomy, so I did that for a couple weeks. And I'm like, my dude, this is such like a man's point of view in the 1800s. Like, oh yeah, I can learn everything I need to know in 2 weeks about this topic.
Yeah.
When people spend like 5 years trying to figure it all out.
Yeah. So I have a little bit of a question about the timeline, because I didn't think it was super clear, or maybe I just didn't fully grasp it. So he creates the monster, and he's like, oh my gosh, this thing is crazy looking. And I don't know if he got scared of it or what, but then it seems like 3 months after the creation, he's hearing about, I guess via letter, that William has died. Mm-hmm. I think it said it was 3 months. So, but then it's like, where did the monster go? Like, where's he been for the last 3 months? Did you just set him loose because you were afraid of him and hope he didn't come back, or like wander off to die or something? I was a little confused, like, wait, where's the monster this whole time after you created it?
Well, yeah. So, yes, essentially, those are two different questions. The first one is, of course, yes, Frankenstein created this monster, looked at it, and was shocked for some reason that an 8-foot-tall creature made from different bits of body parts was disgusting to look at. And essentially, yeah, just like ran away from the problem and didn't want to face it. But I think a lot of what the monster did in those 3 months, we get in his little spiel in his section. So like that, where he was like learning to speak, learning to read, and when he was doing all of the kind things for the family whose mm-hmm. shed he was staying in, like I think that was the 3 months. And then after they rejected him, he went back, and that's when he killed the kid, and then everything else happened.
Okay, see, I that's what I think that, yeah, that's also what I think was supposed to be happening. But I noticed in the creature's monologue, that which he is later telling Victor about how he learned how to read, learned how to speak, like collected firewood for this family and all that, it talked about the changing of the seasons. Mm. Like things would be blooming and then it would be like winter, and that, so like to me it sounded like this time where he's essentially shadowing this family,
mm-hmm.
to me it sounded a lot longer than 3 months, which is why I was like confused on the timeline.
Mm.
It was talking about like berries and nuts being in season, and then it would talk about it being really cold in winter, and he learned that fire like could keep him warm. So to me it sounded like it was over the course of at least a year,
mm-hmm.
to control the season. So I was like, well, where was he then for those 3 months, and then how did he kill William in 3 months if he's going through multiple seasons behind this family's house?
Yeah, and maybe we're wrong then, and then it wasn't like a few months and it was maybe a couple years. It's also, yeah. I have to say, very unrealistic for this monster to be able to just like pick up a few books and start to learn how to read and learn how to talk and speak. It was English, right, that the family was speaking, or was it French?
I think it was French.
Okay. Yeah, like that's very unrealistic for this creature to have been able to pick all of that up.
Yeah, by not having like direct education either. He's just like listening in and kind of spying on this family and listening to them talk outside to each other and like
mm-hmm.
picking up on body language and stuff like that. And like, there's no way you could really learn a whole language in a short amount of time like that.
Yeah. And there was, you know, there was that bit where the family's brother, son, whoever, had a lover who was, I think, Turkish or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was, like, learning how to speak French. And so there was, like, maybe a little bit he could have picked up from that. But that was after he had been there for a bit and after he had already known what people were talking about. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Anyway, just that little – I felt like there was two conflicting timelines, or maybe I wasn't fully lining up the whole – it felt like he was in the woods spying on this family for multiple seasons. But then it seemed like – Frankenstein, it seemed like Victor Frankenstein,
mm-hmm.
it seemed like at 3 months after he created the monster is when he got word that William was killed. So I was like, maybe I'm not fully understanding this timeline.
Oh, yeah, little fuzzy on that.
So, yeah, there are multiple murders in the story. William, mm-hmm. the little boy, is murdered, which he is Victor's nephew, right? I'm pretty sure. I think
nephew or brother, one or the other. He's definitely his relation.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's nephew, and he's young, like 7 or so.
Yeah, and what happened, I think what happened was that the creature had come back to the city after he'd been rejected by this family, which mm-hmm. had to have hurt. But he like came back into the city and he like came across this kid, and this kid had a poor reaction to the sight of him. And then he mentioned the name Frankenstein, and the monster was like, oh no, we're not doing this. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And it kind of sucked because he like what took the locket off of the kid and then put it into Victor's sister's pocket. And that's how she got put on trial and hung for the murder of the kid, of William.
Yeah, I was a little fuzzy on that as well. So Justine is the one who is being accused of killing William. I thought she was like their live-in maid. I didn't think she was actually blood relation to them, but I could be wrong about that. I thought she was more like a maid.
Actually, yeah, no, okay. So it's that Victor's parents had taken her in essentially as an orphan, and then she later became the nanny. So
okay,
not actually related genetically, but very close to the family. Yeah. Yes,
family. Yeah, so she was accused of killing William because of the locket, and but Frankenstein, Victor, he's like, I know she wouldn't do it, I know she didn't do it, but there's like not a way to prove it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like then it's right around then that Victor realizes the creature is the one who killed him, but he doesn't have a way to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially Justine has to go down for it, and she goes to jail and then I think is beheaded.
Yeah. She gets the guillotine.
Poor Justine.
Yeah, you hate to see it.
Yeah. And so then later in the book we have Victor's friend, I think it's his friend, Henry Clerval.
Yes, his friend.
Murdered. I can't remember if that was his professor, if it was just his friend. Something related with the scientist stuff.
Yeah, they were besties, I think.
Yeah.
And they had, they were going to travel around together, which is what people did back in the day.
Yeah. And then Elizabeth gets murdered, and then his father gets murdered. There's just a whole lot of murder.
Yeah, well, I mean, the creature did say to Frankenstein, like, I'm going to make your life essentially a living hell. And Frankenstein was like, oh, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
That's something that I had an issue with, because when Frankenstein's creature was like, I will be with you on your wedding night. And rather than think that the creature was going to go after his loved one, he was like, oh, that just means he's going to kill me. I don't know why he would ever think that. Like, to me, it was obviously clear that this creature was going to go after his loved ones, because, and I think that we should talk about this as well, the creature had made a request for essentially a partner, somebody who would be like him, who would understand him, and they would just go off to South America together alone and not be an issue. And then Frankenstein was shocked that he was essentially still alive and all of his loved ones were getting killed by the creature.
Yeah, so that's the whole reason why the monster even starts killing after William. Because he comes to Victor Frankenstein and says, like, please make me a mate. I'm so lonely. I'm so, like, depressed. Can you make me a mate? And the two of us will just run off to South America and we'll live a quiet life. And at first, Victor is, like, kind of back and forth with it. And then he says yes to creating a mate. But then he goes back on his word and decides, no, I'm not doing that. So the whole time the creature is, like, getting more frustrated because he just wants somebody who's like him.
Mm-hmm. You would understand him, which is a very, I guess, a very reasonable thing to want. I do think, though, that I think Victor at one point said something like, you know, how can, well, first of all, he says, well, what if this female creature, like, sees man and realize how superior we are to the creature, which is very funny to me. But also he's like, well, what if the mate doesn't want the same thing that the original monster wants?
Yeah. What if she doesn't want to go to South America? What if she doesn't want to be with you?
Yeah. Which, like, understandable. And I get why that hangs him up at that point. But, like, my dude, you already made this creature. You already took all of these steps. Like, you are the creator of your own unhappiness here. This is all because of you.
Yeah. So do you think that Victor was right to refuse, in the end, making a mate for the creature?
I do think that he was probably right in that. I think that we, as much as I understand the creature's desire to have, why he was so upset that nobody understood him and that he had no one to talk to, I do think Victor was right when he said, you know, what if this monster doesn't want the same things?
Yeah, like, I'm not going to create something just for your benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think so, too. Plus, you never know, like, I mean, I guess if you were to make him a mate and they moved off to South America, pretty soon South America could be populated with full of creatures. And then, like, what if those go over the human race? And that was all because Victor made a mate for the original creature.
Yeah. I mean, my assumption would, of course, be that since it's made out of bits of dead bodies, that that couldn't happen. But you never know, because you shouldn't be able to create life anyway. So
yeah. So it's, I think it's that same time when Victor tells the creature, all right, I changed my mind, I'm not making you a mate. It's that night, or pretty soon after, that the creature then goes to kill Clerval,
mm-hmm.
Victor's friend, because he's mad.
Mm-hmm.
And so as it was going on, I realized that nobody has seen the creature except for the family where he learned English or learned French and learned like basic survival tactics. Nobody has seen the monster up to this point. It's all been like stuff that's happened in the dark of night and stuff like that. I started to question if the creature was even real and
mm-hmm.
Victor Frankenstein was just mentally ill.
Yes. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's like part of the reason why he doesn't bring it up during Justine's trial, right? Is that he's like, nobody's gonna believe me that I created this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if I, it seems like the monster was very real, yeah.
We do find out at the end that he was real, but up until then I was like, what if, you know, what if Victor Frankenstein just went on some like crazy rampage because he's mentally ill and actually killed William and this whole family that taught the creature how to read and survive. Maybe that was never actually real.
Mm. But we do, I guess the novel again opens with the captain, who's a third party,
yeah
seeing it, but I'd forgotten that that was the creature at the time.
Yeah. And so yeah, right at the end, I think it's the last two chapters, maybe three, is when Victor is like, I guess he's on like a sled dog trailer, not trailer, but a sled pulled by sled dogs.
And yeah,
like way up in the North Pole area. Is he just like trying to get away from the creature? I couldn't figure out why he was up there.
No, I think the creature was running away from him, right? Because towards the end, Victor was decided he should face what he had created and essentially kill it. And so I thought that the creature was trying to escape Victor because Victor was so mad that he had murdered all these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would.
Yeah, and it's, so that's,
yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize that they had made it all the way that far north.
Well, yeah. It seems like the creature would have also been better suited for that. It seems like if he just kept going past that, he'd be perfectly fine.
Yeah. He can make friends with the Abominable Snowman or a
Yeti. Yeah. That could be besties or the Kraken, any of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So at the very end, I guess that this is at the very end is from the perspective of this boat captain. We see that the creature gets onto like a little raft of some kind and floats off into the water, into the dark of night.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't actually die for sure at the end. I mean, maybe he drowned eventually or whatever, but we don't actually see the point where the creature dies.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a little weird that it was ending that way, because the whole time Victor Frankenstein is like, I have to kill what I created. I have to take care of it. And then at the end, for Victor to die and the creature to float off into the unknown, it's like, well, whatever really happened to him?
Yeah. I kind of like that it was just like, well, we can't, I guess, can't destroy it. So we'll just send him off and he's just out into the wild. You know, actually, so when we have Bride of Frankenstein and all of that, is that just what we came up with after, you know, hundreds of years later, after Shelley had died?
I actually kind of thought about that. Like, maybe Shelley wrote it with him kind of floating off into the unknown to set it up for a potential second book.
Mm.
But I don't know.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I forgot about Bride of Frankenstein. I don't know when that came out. 35 is the film. Bride of
So yes, long after. And that, yeah, that must have been an original idea.
Oh, and that guy who played Frankenstein, Boris Karloff, he's in that one too. Also.
Oh, nice.
Also playing the creature.
I might watch that. Just for funsies.
Yeah, it's a... Oh, and Lord Byron is in that one. Or there's somebody who plays Lord Byron.
I was going to say. he's dead by then.
Yeah, it came out in 1935. Black and white.
Did we have talkies then? Or is it... It's not a silent movie, is it?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I already closed out the tab, so I'm not going back to it.
Okay.
All right.
Well, okay.
Majority of the notes that I have throughout. You have any other points?
Yes, just that I love that Mary Shelley, I think that in the Wikipedia page I read, maybe some other, also the New Yorker, it was that Mary Shelley had been like thinking about what kind of story she should write, and then she had a dream where she envisioned this whole story. And it's just very funny to me that her thought was, what's the scariest thing that I can think of? And coming up with a scientist who will just do the science and not think about the repercussions of his actions, and then later not, like, try to run away from him and not deal with it.
Yeah.
That was just very funny.
He very definitely did not take responsibility for his creations and just, like, end it. So it made me think also, like, he's not a very responsible scientist by thinking about what he's the repercussions, like you said, of what he's doing.
Yeah. And it reminded me, because my family has been talking about Oppenheimer recently in our group chat. It just reminded me of that, because he did a similar thing where he made the atomic bomb and then was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Whoops.
Yeah. Like, maybe think about it for a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention is just that in, I think it was maybe the 1931 version, Mary wrote a little foreword where it's, she said, and now once again, I bid my hideous progeny go forth and prosper. I have an affection for it was the offspring of happy days when death and grief were but words, which found no true echo in my heart. Its several pages speak of many a walk, many a drive, and many of a conversation when I was not alone. And I just like how she seems to view this book in a way that Frankenstein viewed his creation.
Mm-hmm.
I just like that little bit from her. I think that was in the 1931 version. So I was reading a couple of this is the last thing I want to talk about, but we read the 1818 version, and there is the later version in which there are some small changes, and it seems like in the later version, Victor seems to be more of a victim of evil rather than like having a lot of empathy for the monster.
Hmm.
So I think that there are some changes, and there was a lot of discussion. I read a little Reddit back and forth on this, where people were like, well, you should really read the 1931 version versus the 1818 version versus and so on and so forth. So I don't know if maybe if we had read the later version, we would have liked it, or you would have liked it more, but I don't know. So there were some, it's not just like an abridged version that the later one was. It seems like there were some small changes in the story as well.
Yeah.
But what can you do?
Yeah. One other thing I just thought of. So this version is called Frankenstein, A Modern Prometheus.
Mm-hmm.
The Prometheus part of it, I'm wondering how that ties in. So do you remember who Prometheus is?
Yes, he was the one who defied the gods and gave fire to humans.
Yeah. In the form of technology, knowledge, and more generally, civilization, when I do a quick Google search.
Yeah.
So how do you think, do you think that Victor Frankenstein is the modern day Prometheus?
Yes, I think so. Was essentially, he was like trying to bring life and create his own life and essentially defy our version of God, who's supposed to be, you know, like the one who created life and endows, you know, like souls into bodies and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, yeah, that's essentially what she was going with that title. What do you think?
I don't know that I agree. I feel like the whole reason that Victor Frankenstein made this creation was for his own selfishness. Like,
oh, for sure.
Like, it had, creating this creature served no purpose to the rest of humanity other than him just wanting to say, yeah, I created something out of dead body parts and it serves no purpose, but I made it. Or, you know, like, it just felt very selfish and self-centered. So I don't know that I really agree, because at least it seems like Prometheus giving fire to the rest of humanity, that's beneficial for the rest of the community, but
That was like a huge technological revolution. Essentially.
The creature is not benefiting the rest of society. If anything, it's hurting society by killing innocent people.
True.
So I don't know that I totally agree with the title, unless unless I'm just getting the whole thing wrong.
Well, no. I mean, I guess if you only view it as defying the gods, then yes. But as if you look at it the way that you are, I totally agree, now that you bring that up, that like, this was not a revolution. This was just this one guy doing this for selfish reasons.
Yeah.
So that he could have this big scientific advancement.
I hate
Victor Frankenstein.
Yeah, I figured you would. When I was like, man, he's doing all these science experiments that are benefiting nobody other than his ego.
Then he like tries to run away from all of his problems and is like, oh
my gosh, take some responsibility, sir. Like, if nothing else, at least kill it so you know it's not going to hurt anybody else.
Yeah, kill it, or even, yes, well, first of all, first option would be to kill it. But if you can't kill it, then it seems like removing yourself from the equation would also be beneficial, because he's only murdering other people because of you.
Yeah.
And so if you're not around anymore, then hypothetically he'd stop. But,
well, I wonder if that had happened, what's the creature going to do after that? Because now he has no lifeline to his creator. Like, if he, you know, if he has any problems and he doesn't have any insight as to what to do, plus nobody wants to look at him because he's so horrible, and I don't know.
Yeah,
like, what would he do then?
I think that the creature wouldn't have been that bad. I think for the most part he wasn't, I have a lot of sympathy for this thing. He wasn't like a bad creature. He was just put in these circumstances where he reacted this way. And what, like, if I were shunned by every single person that I ever met, like, I would probably have a similar disposition.
Yeah.
So I think that if Victor went around, I think that the creature would have just done essentially the same thing that he wanted to do with his partner and just disappear into South America
and live on berries and nuts.
Yeah, he doesn't require the same things the normal humans require. Are we ready to rate it?
All right, what is our scale? You pick, because I think I picked the last one.
5 out of 5 foolish scientists. How many do you give this?
Oh, let's see. I'm going to go middle of the road and do a 3.2.
Okay. I give it a much higher rating. I give it like a 4.5. I really like
it. Oh, okay. I think the only thing for me was that little bit of confusion on the timeline from when the monster is created to the time where William is killed, and then the time frame where the monster's learning how to essentially survive and communicate. That I felt like was a little. But I do like I think my favorite part of the story was the creature recollecting to Victor, like, this is how I learned how to talk, this is how I learned, like, his whole story that he told about kind of shadowing that other family. I liked that part of it the best from his perspective. The little bit of confusion with the timeline, and then just the writing style for me, just the old English, I think, is not something I super enjoy, but it wasn't like terrible.
Okay.
Fair enough. That's my reasoning for the rating. But it was a good story. I'm glad we read it, because this is not at all what I thought Frankenstein was actually about.
I think in general I want to revisit some of the books that we read for school, just because at the time I was very upset about having to read for school. I want to revisit a couple others.
Yeah, especially in like middle school and even in high school. Old English to me then was like torture having to read that, because it didn't make any sense. At least now when I'm older, like, I can understand it better. It's still like, I feel like, really long-winded, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and I think it also helps that I can have an audiobook now. I don't know. Yeah. If there were audiobooks at the time, like when we were younger. Like, I had Black Beauty on CD.
Yeah, I was going to say they were on CD, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a little less accessible. So I think that that's also helping some as well.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So our next short story is called Club Zeus, and it's in the Awayland series by Ramona Isabel.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I'm going to pick our next book, too. Mm-hmm. And I did not clear this with you, but this was the book that I wanted to pick back in January, I think, or maybe December, but I changed my mind, so now I want to go back to this one. It's called mm-hmm. The Unmaking of June Farrow by Adrienne Young.
Okay.
Have you read that one?
Nope.
Okay, so it came out like October of 2023, so it's still very new.
Mm-hmm.
But the reviews on it, I think, are something that I'm like, okay, I think I would like that one. So it's got a little bit of time travel, a little bit of mystery, a little bit of a love story. But the reviews that I read said that Adrienne Young talks about the time travel aspect in such a clear way that, like, it's sometimes with the time travel, it's a little bit confusing, or it's not totally explained how the time traveling works. But supposedly the reviews say that Adrienne Young does a very good job of explaining the time travel aspect so that it's very easy to understand.
Okay. So I'm excited to read.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Marianne and Wanda. We would love to hear your feedback and if you have any books or topics for us to review.
You can reach us at Marianne and Wanda Podcast on Instagram, or send us an email at Marianne and Wanda Podcast @gmail.com. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.